Time now for Connecting the Diocese. Connecting the Diocese is a production of the Diocese of La Crosse. Here's host Jack Socha.
Thank you so much for joining us on Connecting the Diocese on this special Sunday-only show. Along the network, Saturday was frequently a once-in-every-once-in-a-while pledge drive, which gets money to keep these networks running. And when they keep running, we keep running. So we're happy to step aside for a day. But we've got a good show for you right now. Paul Sadek coming up. Going to give you some things to talk about if you need to entertain a little bit with movies and things like that in these upcoming holidays and family visits. So we'll be right back with that after this on Connecting the Diocese Sunday edition. This being the day after Veterans Day, I wanted to share a little something with you that was in a discussion group not related to veterans, but somebody posted just a matter of days ago. Quoting now, Richard, my husband, never really talked a lot about his time in Vietnam, other than he had been shot by a sniper. However, he had a rather grainy 8x10 black and white photo had been taken at a USO show of Anne Margaret. The photo was one of his quiet treasures. A few years ago, Anne Margaret was doing a book signing at a local bookstore, and Richard wanted to see if he could get her to sign this treasured photo. Before her appearance, bookstore employees announced that she would sign only her book and no memorabilia would be permitted. This wasn't because they were being mean, this was because it would just take up so much time. Richard was disappointed, but he still wanted just to show her the photo and let her know how much those shows meant to lonely GI so far from home. Anne Margaret came out looking beautiful. He presented his book for her to sign and then took out the photo. When he did that, there were immediate shouts from the employees that she would not sign it. Richard said, "I understand. I just wanted her to see it." She took one look at the photo. Tears welled up in her eyes, and she said, "This is one of my gentlemen from Vietnam, and I will most certainly sign his photo. I know what these men did for their country, and I always have time for my gentlemen." And she made quite a do about the bravery of the young men she met over the years, and how much she admired them, and how much she appreciated them. There weren't too many dry eyes among those close enough to hear. That night was a turning point for him. He walked a little straighter. Later at dinner, Richard was very quiet. When I asked if he'd like to talk about it, my big, strong husband broke down in tears. That was the first time anyone ever thanked me for my time in the Army. Now, I make it a point to say thank you to every person I come across who served in our armed forces. Freedom does not come cheap, and I am grateful for all those who have served their country. Unquote.
Catholic News and Interviews. This is Connecting the Diocese.
Well, I want to welcome back to the special Sunday show one of the people you've heard from before, Paul Sadek, who not only is a broadcaster from a number of years, but he also has his own program in the early morning hours on Irrelevant Radio. Paul, welcome back to the show.
Jack, we've come a long way on these shows, technically at least. I remember sitting in the front seat of your car recording these shows with you, and now we're about 150 miles away from each other and sound like we're in the same room. So there's technology for you.
Exactly. And a few weeks ago, as I probably mentioned to you, we connected to our orphanage in Peru the same way.
Oh, wow.
And that's crazy. They're in Peru.
That is so cool when that happens. Yeah.
Although I must admit, sitting in a car, acoustically was a wonderful thing. I think we went to the diocese to record and we realized they were closed for some reason.
Well, there was another time we were there and they were doing construction.
Yes, that's what it was. Yes.
And in the place where we were going to record, the acoustics were like a high school gym anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So note to would-be podcasters, you can record in your car.
Yes.
With the windows up, assuming it's not August and 100 degrees outside.
Right. Yeah.
Which we've done those too, where we had to roll the window down for a few minutes to cool the car down, roll them back up.
Oh, we need to take a break.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah. But yeah, this is amazing. The technology is able to provide us with opportunities that we never would have dreamed available. I've been doing it for 10 years. And it's amazing that we have been able to get as far as we have and do all the different things. So it's a wonderful thing.
Since you mentioned my show, I need to get a plug in.
Absolutely.
It's called Daybreak. It's kind of an upbeat show of morning devotions, and it's heard on Relevant Radio every day at 4 a.m. Or you can get it on the Relevant Radio app at any time.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a mixture of all kinds of great way to start your day for those of you who are getting up. And again, as you say, just like this show is archived, you can listen anytime you want, which is fine. We are doing this on Sunday because the Relevant Radio is having a pledge drive on Saturday, or I should say had one. And we are very grateful to them for supporting us. That is this show for all these years. It's just phenomenal they've been able to do it for us. So don't forget them. Whenever they talk to you about giving them some support, think about them as well, okay? We're going to talk about, I know Thanksgiving is a ways away. I'm coming up shortly in a week or so. I'm going to have our own Kathy Cooper, our resident chef, on with the last minute tips to get ready for Thanksgiving. Things we've done annually. But the day of Thanksgiving, after the food is over with, you end up watching football and stuff like that. And there's some people don't want to do that. They want to do something else. And maybe you've got some kids of different ages. You want to keep them busy. We're going to talk a little bit about one of our favorite subjects, movies.
Yes, yes.
And we have from the sublime to the ridiculous.
That's right.
I tend to work on the ridiculous side. But
You've tipped me off to some wonderful, ridiculous movies. That's
yes,
true.
Yes, I must admit, I have found some. And before we get into that, I was also going to mention that those of you who have a Dollar Tree store, what used to be the dollar store, they're now the dollar and a quarter store, they pretty much uniformly have a pile of DVDs, movies, and they're a buck and a quarter. And surprisingly consistent mix from this. I go to three different stores depending on who's got the cat food in stock.
Yeah.
And I've noticed glancing down at them, I see the same titles, which means there's a good chance that the ones I've found may be also still available the next time you go to a Dollar Tree.
I'll have to check that out.
For those of you who still use DVDs, you know, I've got a laptop with a plug-in DVD.
I like DVDs and Blu-ray discs because I like to have my hands on something.
Yes, yes. And in this mix that are currently there, they might be gone by now, there's a series of movies and other DVD products that were put out by the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation. So these are not really like total dud movies that nobody wants to watch. One was from a series, a two-disc set, called Days That Shook the World, okay. The complete second season. There says there are days that have had something we took for granted vanish, or our perceptions were completely altered. And this has been called the consistently illuminating history. In this two-disc set, these are each like one-hour shows. It's called Disaster in the Sky, The Hindenburg, and The Challenger. One of my favorites, The Christmas Truce from World War I.
Oh, yes.
The Attack on Pearl Harbor. The Grand Heist, Colonel Blood's Theft of the British Crown Jewels, and also The Great Train Robbery. Conspiracy to Kill, The Real Day of the Jackal, and also The Wolf's Lair, and also Galileo's Trial, and Yuri Gagarin's Flight. These are great combos. Dinosaurs and Duplicity, The Discovery of the First Dinosaur, and also The Fake Piltdown Man, which is a great story. Also, The Assassination of Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, yes.
And the Oklahoma City bombings, Gary Powers' U-2 spy plane, yeah. And Colonel Rudolf Abel, Soviet spy, and the execution of Anne Boleyn, and the abdication of Edward.
Since you mentioned the Christmas truce,
yes,
and we're talking movies, I have to bring up a very special one called Joyeux Noël. It's about the Christmas truce of World War I. And what is amazing is how those who participated in it were disciplined, lambasted, criticized for shutting down for, about 12 hours.
Right.
But it was a wonderful time, and I highly recommend the movie.
We played excerpts. There was a musical version done by a group from Minneapolis, and I played parts of it, and it is just thrilling where in the middle of this, you know, it's Christmas, right? And apparently one of the people on the other side was formerly, you know, an opera singer and began singing, you know, Oh Holy Night, and people just stopped shooting.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about that closer to Christmas, but it is a delightful, delightful true story.
And I see that there are actually two movies by the title Joyeux Noël. The one I'm talking about is from 2005.
Okay, I have looked that one up now, too. The other thing I found, this is again from the Dollar Tree store.
Okay.
This is the complete series of the old television, like late 1950s, Sherlock Holmes TV show.
Oh, my.
And it's the whole thing. I mean, it's like every episode. There's a million of them. Plus, because they wanted to fill up the DVD, they've got the old public domain ones with Basil Rathbone on it.
Oh, well. Yes. Wonderful stuff.
Yeah. This was a buck and a quarter. I got my winter viewing going on. Another thing I found was it was the second season of the latest version of the British sci-fi fantasy show Doctor Who. This is not part of the Marvel universe. This is a separate thing. It's been going on for years.
Mm-hmm.
The Doctor Who was a time lord who traveled through space and time and always ended up getting involved in something going on. What was really cute and very practical for the British was that every few years, Doctor Who would temporarily go into stasis, kind of like a cocoon, and he would come out looking different.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Well, this enabled them to change actors.
Good. That's right.
and there have been actors that were very serious, actors that were very comical, you know, and it kept changing. And I have not kept up with it. For some reason, Doctor Who never got big in this country that I can talk about.
Yeah.
He travels in a what looks like a big police call box. That was, you know, the police would use to phone in. And, of course, it's about the size of a phone booth. But when you open the door and step inside, it's a huge craft.
Okay.
The whole thing is cute. And I've got the second episode's got a whole bunch of interesting stories. A couple of them are fairly serious, some not so serious. If you like science fiction stuff, if you like Star Trek kind of stuff, even though you don't have the long history of Doctor Who, it's probably been 20 years on British media.
It would be hard to catch up.
Yeah, it would be real hard to catch up, yeah. But it is kind of an amusing thing to find. And there's another one called Doctor Who Deep Breath. I haven't watched it, but it was apparently like the introduction to the new Doctor Who of the particular season that was in. So these are all, you know, again, they're a buck and a quarter movies. There are romances. There's a dreadful number of movies of people brandishing guns on the front cover, you know, so-called action movies.
Oh, sure.
You know, I don't favor those. I get tired of those. And, you know, it has Chuck Norris in it. I kind of go, I don't think so, you know.
Well, I went to the movies about a week and a half ago, and I saw one which is still out there called After Death. Now, this is a documentary done as a feature film. It explores the afterlife based on real near-death experiences conveyed by scientists, authors, and survivors. What's fascinating about it is that there is one scientist who openly admits that the first time he heard about near-death experiences, he called them hogwash. Had nothing whatsoever to good to say about them. But then he kept hearing similar stories from different people who had no connection with each other from all around the world. And he decided he'd better start looking into it. So this is from Angel Studios. And I got to tip my hat to Angel Studios. They seem to be making real headway in the movie industry. This is a cinematic peek, I'm reading from the IMDb summary now, a cinematic peek beyond the veil that examines the spiritual and scientific dimensions of mortality, inviting you to contemplate the possibility of life after death. I give it high marks. It was a very, very well done film.
Angel Studios, they're trying to make good movies, and I don't mean good production values. I mean movies that are not trash heaps, basically.
Well, and what's wonderful is that they are coming out with really high production values.
Yeah.
These are Hollywood quality movies, though I hate to use that term.
Yeah, we have laughed in the past about the term made by a church movie.
Yeah.
You know, which they may be really, really sincere and wonderful. There's one I recently watched. I don't know if it was done by a church group or who. It was called 97 Souls, and it was about this guy who was doing some experiments with vision, and he accidentally gets some stuff in his eyes, and he can see what people are are really thinking about. Mm-hmm. And they show up behind them in kind of a ghostly like image. So they may be acting happy, but really they're crying. And it was a delightful, beautiful movie. Towards the end, he's working at a homeless shelter, and he's being able to figure out what some of these people who are suffering from PTSD and stuff like that really need to change their lives around. And there was this one, you know, veteran there who was just homeless and basically in really rough shape. And he sees the guy painting.
Okay.
And he says, I'm going to enroll you in the community art school. And the guy says, you are? I've always wanted to do that. You know, it would be a nice movie. Yeah. But it directorship, lines, acting, what can I
say?
Well,
I saw one and I got several ads on it. So I finally said, okay, I'll take a look. It was about time travel. Hmm. And that's a science fiction genre that I love seeing a good story on. It was about preachy time travel. they were preaching.
Oh, preachy time. Yes. I think I know what you're talking about.
I was amazingly disappointed in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Even my friend Josh Raymond at Relevant Radio, who shares the time travel interest with me, when I told him about it and offered to send him the copy, he said, "Nah, I'll pass."
Yeah, I think I know the one you're talking about. I think I got partway through it, and sometimes you just kind of go, oh. There have been so many time travel movies in the past year or so. It's kind of like every time I see a description, you know, in a horror movie where it says, a group of teens go into the woods to a cabin and, you know, and then you fill in, they discover something horrible. Oh, not another one of those. It was filmed in the woods with a camper, right? No, thank you.
I think about the one, the commercial where the teens are in the woods and there's a guy after them, an evil guy, and they say, let's hide behind these chainsaws.
not good. No.
And the evil guy breaks the fourth wall and looks at the camera like, oh boy.
Yeah, it's just as bad as the way too many zombie movies that are out there now. After you've seen 15 zombie movies, you've seen them all.
One would think so, yeah.
Yeah, but there have been some interesting time. There's two of them that stuck in my mind. One was called Needle in a Time Stack. It was interesting because it had a predominantly all-black cast, and it was about this guy who meets the love of his life.
Okay.
And there was her boss really had interest in her. And this is a time in the future where if you're very rich, you can go back in time and enjoy things, but don't change them, right?
Right.
Well, this guy bought this package to go back in time, but he managed to change it so this guy never met this woman so he could have her. And so in the new time stream, the guy's got a totally different wife than he had before, and he thinks there's something wrong going on. And in the long run, at the end, you know, they're at another gathering, and he meets the first woman again for the first time. It was good. And then there was another one called Fate, where this, due to some circumstance, the guy's breaking up with his girlfriend or she's upset about something, and she gets hit by a car and killed. And basically, he keeps trying to go back in time to stop it from happening until finally he steps in front of the car.
Okay.
And, of course, this prevents her from being killed.
All right.
But in the last part of the movie, before the credits roll, you hear the same sequence where the machinery is starting up, and only now it's her going back to try to save him.
Ah.
So, you know, the time stuff. Yeah.
Then there was one, and the title escapes me at the moment. Maybe you have it, but Bruce Willis is sent back in time.
And 12 Monkeys.
It's the one where his mission is to kill his younger self.
Oh, maybe that isn't the one.
So that he never existed.
I haven't seen that. 12 Monkeys is the big one that he did that was pretty amazing as well.
Yeah.
These are fun movies to see. And there have been ones from years ago. There was a Time After Time where
H.G.
Wells invents a real-time machine, and Jack the Ripper steals it.
The names are escaping me now.
Well, it's time after time.
Yeah.
And Manny Steenburgen.
Mary Steenburgen.
And she and the guy who used to be in Clockwork Orange played H.G. Wells.
Yes.
And they met and fell in love on the set.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I said, yeah. Well,
Malcolm McDowell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was fun because it was sort of related to the Time Machine movie from the early 60s.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's a bunch of them out there. And on a par of 1 to 10, you could probably average them out to a good 6. You know?
There are
very few that are so spectacular they knock your socks off. And there's some that are just not so dreadful that that they're okay. They're okay. The indies, there's a lot of good indie movies out there. A lot of them have rough edges around them because they're not getting the grade A directors and all this stuff like that. But it's the way it goes.
Well, let me go back to Angel Studios. I managed to see several previews when I went to the movies a week and a half ago. And one of them, it's coming out this weekend. As this show is being broadcast, it's already out. And I hope to see it Sunday afternoon. It's called Journey to Bethlehem. Now, this is a light pop musical about the Nativity, featuring none other than Antonio Banderas. And I sat and watched this, and I said, man, this really looks good. Yes, it's Angel Studios again. It's all shot in Spain with some very good representations of the Holy Land. I dearly look forward to seeing it. The music was catchy and fun. Journey to Bethlehem.
That's coming out about the time people are hearing us.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Are these going to be coming out in theaters? Are they also going to be coming out online?
Well, the ones I've talked about so far are coming out in theaters.
Okay. And
There is one that's coming out online, or I think it's already out online, that I really want to see. But unfortunately for me, it's on Netflix only right now, and it's called The Light We Cannot See. This is about a young woman who happens to be blind during World War II, who becomes kind of the Allies version of Axis Sally. She broadcasts the truth much to her own danger. And the trailer that I saw, it looks fascinating. But I'm going to have to wait a while to see it because I don't have Netflix.
Right. It'll make the rounds elsewhere as well.
It will eventually.
Speaking of World War II, I just watched one that I thought was quite wonderful. Now, it takes place in Ireland, and it's about a man who is 92 years old. He is in an assisted care center. He is a veteran of the D-Day invasion. He has just lost his wife of 68 years and is feeling very lost. And despite the fact that he's in an assisted care center because he's got a weak heart, he's got diabetes, he's got all these things they have to keep. He decides he is going to go to that particular year, the 75th anniversary of the D-Day landings.
Oh, my. Okay.
And they tell him, no, you can't go. You can't make it. Well, he sneaks out. He sneaks out with his medals that he got and a banana in his pocket. Okay? and an outdated passport as well. And this movie, it has, it's a tearjerker. It's a beautiful, beautiful tearjerker. What's very interesting is the guy who plays the 92-year-old man beautifully, Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, wow. I've always liked Pierce. He also was in the film version of Mamma Mia. And
yes.
I thought his singing was acceptable. Yeah.
He was also in Mars Attacks. Let's just put it this way. Anybody who can go from James Bond to Mars Attacks is doing pretty good.
Yep.
But I think that this one, my first impression was this guy could get an Oscar for this one.
One would think. Yeah.
And frankly, it was some of the first parts of it were hard to watch because at the first parts, his wife is still alive. She has dementia. She really doesn't recognize him.
Yeah.
And he's hand feeding her with a little spoon, her favorite ice cream. Yeah. And, anybody who's taking care of a spouse, especially one who's dying, it's hard to watch.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to watch. But once you get past that, It's the typical story in most cases where you've got the people who understand what he's doing and they try to help him, sometimes in nefarious ways. And that's kind of what's pretty funny, I mean, how they do it. You've got other more serious parts. And there's a backstory, which I'm not even going to mention, that everything falls into place why he really wants to go back there.
Mm-hmm.
And without being this is not the spoiler, so don't worry. Once he gets to France, he looks for his old regiment, these riflemen.
Right.
He's the last one left.
Oh, my.
But if you wait past the credits, you know, you think the movie's over. They've got the character, the last rifleman from this Irish regiment that was fighting with the British.
Mm-hmm.
They have him up in a huge military helicopter flying over Normandy Beach.
Okay.
And the helicopter lands, and he gets out, and this big building where the front door opens up where they store the helicopters, and there are all these pipers playing Amazing Grace.
Oh, my.
It's great. It is really good.
I had the good fortune to be at Omaha Beach this summer when I went to France, and it was quite, just being on the beach there was quite moving, but then we walked around, we saw a bunker that the Nazis had left behind, and memorials with all the names of the veterans who had lost their lives in the Normandy invasion. And then, of course, the American Veterans Cemetery with tons and tons of white crosses.
Sure, sure. In one of the scenes of the movie, the bus he's making to get to the ferry to get to France breaks down, right?
Okay.
And he starts hitchhiking with this teenage boy, and the boy says, "No one's going to stop us. They don't do that anymore." And he goes, "Well, we'll see." And the boy says, "No, no one's going to stop us. Things have changed." And this 18-wheeler pulls up and stops. and he gets in, and the truck driver is a woman.
Okay.
And so he says to the kid, "Yeah, I guess things have changed." But and they get pretty close. He's still got to get further, and the only vehicle that can get him close to the actual D-Day area is a bunch of German veterans. And he's the only Irish guy. Okay. He gets on the bus. And here they had Jürgen Prochnow playing this German officer, talking to him, and how they don't become buddies. Not a buddy movie. But they acknowledge each other's humanity, which is, again, a lot of good stuff in it. One thing I thought was great, he's in a little cafe drinking a cup of coffee, trying to figure out what to do, because he's just learned that he's the last guy there. And this black veteran from World War II comes over, and he explains that he was in a company of black soldiers who were the first ones on the beach to deploy the barrage balloons, the balloons that that float above the shoreline so that enemy planes can't strafe the troops.
Right.
And I was suspecting they didn't make this up. I haven't had a chance to look it up. But if that was the first black company of barrage balloon people, I'm very interested in that, because my father taught people during World War II how to deploy barrage balloons. And
title again?
It's called The Last Rifleman.
I will have to check it out.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, you got yourself into trouble since you mentioned that Pierce Brosnan appeared in Mars Attacks. I have to mention that I actually watched that movie about 2 weeks ago. It's from 1996, a Tim Burton film. It didn't do very well at the box office. But a little ways in, you start to figure out that it's a takeoff on War of the Worlds.
Oh, yes.
And instead of the Martians dying from the common cold, their heads explode when Slim Whitman music is played.
That's right. Yeah. The movie is based on bubblegum cards.
Right. Uh-huh.
And they look just like the ones on the card. When we were kids, we used to collect these stupid cards, And, yeah. It's a terrific little film. And the music is incredible as they're coming in. And Pierce Brosnan did a wonderful, wonderful job. As long as we're talking about silly science fiction movies, I've pretty much had it right now with all of the superhero movies that are out there.
Oh, yeah.
The Marvel Empire is kind of like blotted out everything else in the world except
Marvel. We got into Captain America a little bit, but as far as the Marvel Universe is concerned, that was about it.
Well, if you have some kids over during Thanksgiving, let's say, and for some reason they're bored, you might try to look up a couple of movies that go back to the 80s. one of them is a Dino De Laurentiis film, and he makes these extravagantly silly movies. It's a remake of the 1930s serial, Flash Gordon.
Oh, yes.
And anybody who knows Flash Gordon, there was Ming the Merciless, and that is played by Max von Sydow.
Okay.
And it is absolutely incredible. The music is done by Queen.
Mm.
And you may know that one of the lead guitarists from Queen also literally was an astrophysicist and also had a lot to do with planning the trajectory to go meet up with that asteroid they recently met up with.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, he was an astrophysicist and a rocker.
Right.
Anyway, it's got gloriously wonderful colors, gloriously crazy evil people, funny heroes. It is just a hoot from the very beginning.
This is the 1980 version you're talking
that
about?
That is correct, yeah.
With
yeah.
Sam Jones.
Yeah, and I don't know who he is.
Well, he's Flash Gordon.
Yes, he's Flash. Yeah, he's and that's about it.
And he also appeared in the movie Ted about the talking teddy bear.
You see, that's his real claim to fame. But they also had a famous, I believe, Italian comedian playing Dr. Zarkov. And again, but Max von Sydow still steals the show as me.
Yeah.
He's just really,
I can
really
imagine.
I hadn't watched it for years, and I got a copy of it, and I watched it. And I have to admit, it was just silly, stupid, escapist fun.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
With the visuals that were extremely funny, long before CGI. And again, it's a Dino De Laurentiis movie. You know, I mean, he makes these kinds of movies. And there's a lot of Italian design color in this movie that is pretty interesting. The other one from a similar era, Buckaroo Banzai and His Adventures into the Eighth Dimension.
Yes, yes.
Now, if you go look at who is in this, John Lithgow, for one,
yep.
Playing a bad guy, a crazy person, it is just filled with stars who were ascending at that point. And Buckaroo Banzai is a skilled neurosurgeon, a brilliant physicist,
mm-hmm.
and all of his other scientists get together and have a rock and roll band.
It works.
Yeah, it is so crazy. The guy who played in RoboCop is Buckaroo Banzai. And there's just a whole bunch of actors who you'll say, gee, what are they doing in this movie? It was just insanely funny. Again, both these movies, Flash Gordon and Buckaroo Banzai, there's no overt sex. There's no overt violence. You know, the kids.
They're just fun.
They're just fun to watch and totally silly. So I would recommend those as well as being a good escapist ones for people who don't want anything particularly serious. And if you happen to be a sci-fi person or like 80s stuff, especially Buckaroo Banzai, the clothing is great.
At the risk of sounding like a commercial for Angel Studios,
that's okay.
I have one more that I picked up from one of the previews at the movie theater. It's not coming out till next March, but also connected with what we were just talking about. It features John Lithgow and David Morse, and it's called Cabrini. It's about St. Frances Cabrini, a poor, audacious woman who became one of the great entrepreneurs of the 19th century. Through willpower, courage, business skill, she overcame sexism and violent anti-Italian bigotry in 19th century New York. And it's from Angel Studios. It comes out next March.
Yeah.
So I'll be looking for that.
Sounds like you're hitting them on all cylinders, I tell you. I have been kind of dreading looking at the newest movies. Again, the one about the Last Rifleman is good. Interestingly, a very similar movie came out a little bit earlier called The Great Escaper,
okay.
Which is about, again, a World War II veteran who has to make his way to the D-Day ceremonies. I'm trying to think.
Michael Caine?
Michael Caine, yeah. He plays okay. That part. It's odd that both movies would have such a similar plot.
Yeah.
I suspect The Great Escaper probably is not quite as complex as The Last Rifleman. I have not had a chance to watch it yet, but I think it'll be probably a good movie. I like everything Michael Caine does. But I think this Last Rifleman is a hitch on multiple levels. There's some complex stuff hiding beneath the surface of the movie. Kind of neat. It's really kind of good.
Okay.
What else you got?
I'm looking at The Great Escaper right now just to stay with that for a couple minutes. Michael Caine, Glenda Jackson, looks very good. I mm-hmm. liked Michael Caine in Inception. Now, if you are familiar with the movie, or if you're not, Leonardo DiCaprio is involved in some industrial espionage in which they figure out how to get into people's dreams and manipulate them. And unfortunately, something, it's not a spoiler as such, because it you find out maybe a quarter to halfway through the movie, Leonardo DiCaprio's wife got so into going into dreams with her husband that she could no longer tell the difference between a dream and real life. And she ended up killing herself in real life, which she thought was a dream. She was insisting that her husband jump out the window with her. And, of course, she died. And Michael Caine plays her father, who understands Leonardo DiCaprio's viewpoint. Unfortunately, he was convicted of murder, and so he can't go home. So that's a big part of the movie. Inception, a very good sci-fi film.
Michael Caine has been in, I think he's making one last movie he mentioned it recently, but you know, he's been doing this stuff since Alfie in the early 60s.
I know.
And he just keeps doing the parts. And he was in one called Water, where it was kind of a British protectorate, some little island of no consequence, right? There was just calm life there, you know, palm trees and coconuts, and people got along. And this guy was kind of the governor of this island, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they discovered that the water beneath the ground would be perfect for bottling, kind of like Fiji water.
Okay.
And they start pumping this water out, and tourists start showing up, and all this stuff was going on.
Uh-huh.
And it was a good romp. The other one he did, which I thought was delightful, was called Secondhand Lions. He and another guy are retired adventurers living out in the middle of nowhere. They beguile this small kid who comes to visit with these stories of these adventures they were on in Arabia, and how they got, you know, almost got in trouble with, you know, a group of cannibals here and there. And yes, and they do a beautiful job with these rollicking stories, right, for this kid. And to do a spoiler, I won't explain how it happens, but at the very end, you find out all the stories were true.
Okay.
It is a good kid movie. It's a great kid movie. Okay. That was good stuff. You and I have both been watching one that the only reason I watch it, I'm still trying to figure out why they made it.
Yeah.
Number two, it's the only movie I've ever heard of that was made and produced by Bell and Howell.
Right. One of the user reviews said, well, they know cameras, but they sure don't know film production.
Now, this is a 1969 movie.
Yeah.
And
it looks like a made-for-TV movie when you
it has that
it.
Feel to it. It's got a bunch of actors in it, though, that are of some renown. I mean, Keenan Wynn is in it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of who's the guy from F Troop who just died recently.
Larry Storch.
Larry Storch, he's in it, and that he's the most oddball to be. He had
Avery Schreiber.
Avery Schreiber, who was a comedian, is in this thing. But Larry Storch is like over-the-top crazy Larry Storch in this trying to be sort of serious movie. Not too serious.
Not too serious at all.
It is such a bizarre movie and such a essentially worthless movie. That
It really is.
That it's on YouTube, and no one cares about the copyright, and no one tries to sell any ads to go with it.
Susan Oliver. Now, I was trying to figure out, what do I know her from? So I went back and I looked through her filmography. She played Hank Williams' wife in the movie Your Cheatin' Heart, which starred George Hamilton, a young George Hamilton, as Hank Williams, with the singing dubbed in by Hank Williams Jr.
Oh, my goodness.
It actually is a good film if you can get into some of the Hank Williams music, but it was kind of romanticized, and Hank Williams' wife, who was played by Susan Oliver, had a big hand in it, so his second wife doesn't even show up in the story.
Ah, of course not. Well, let me give the name of the movie. You can find it on YouTube. It is called The Monitors.
Yes.
The storyline is that somewhere these people appear on Earth called the Monitors.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all fit young men with bowler hats.
Right.
And they do everything from directing traffic to working you through exercise routines to stopping any unpleasantness going on. And the opening theme to this thing...
They've basically taken over the world.
Yeah, that's basically... But they don't get angry. They don't get emotional. They don't hit you. They don't do anything. But they just kind of very pleasantly insist you do this. Isn't it time for your exercises now?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And in one case, one of the other characters in the movie, who, by the way, had recently been, I believe, a Playboy centerfold, was talking about how they tell you how sugar is bad for you and you shouldn't be eating it. And
Carrie Jackson.
Yeah. Essentially, they're really boring overlords.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's a group of resistance trying to work their way around them. And there's a whole series of funny fake ads for the Monitors.
Yeah.
With jingles about the Monitors. You know,
love the Monitors.
Yeah, yeah.
The monitors are good. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there's even little testimonials. You know, there was a... before I met the Monitors, I wasn't educated, and all I was a go-go girl. And now now they sent me to school, and I've learned a lot. Do you want to watch me spell? And there's stuff like this throughout this whole movie. And you sit there going, there's some kind of, you could have a discussion on this about who are they supposed to be representing? They're authoritarians.
You know, some bits of it actually reminded me of the opening sequence of The Prisoner.
Yeah, it's similar to that idea. Yeah, it's very similar to that idea. And speaking of the opening theme music to this thing is the first time I'd ever heard, however they do it, and I have no idea, a later rock standard where they could kind of make a voice sound like it was guitar strings.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they do that. But
it was annoying as can be, but...
Yeah, and it was annoying and boring. You know, we bring tranquility, we bring gentility.
Depend on the Monitors. Work for peace. Violence solves nothing. The Monitors bring peace. Peace brings happiness.
We are the Monitors. It's worth a watch if you just like curious movies.
Guy Stockwell is the star.
Yeah. And wasn't he in a lot? He was in a bunch of, like, The Cat from Outer Space or something like that from Disney.
He made into
a bunch of Disney movies. Or that was Dean Stockwell.
Yeah.
Maybe that was his brother. they both did so well.
They look very similar, so it wouldn't surprise me.
But if you have a few moments and you want to watch something and just ponder it, like, what were they trying to accomplish? I recommend that much of it. It does get worse, but...
it does.
I've gone back and watched it a couple of times going, what were they thinking? You know,
well, you and I have both seen a lot of movies where we wonder that. And unfortunately, in the case of a lot of them, they actually thought they made a pretty good movie.
Yeah. A friend of mine once said of movies from the late 60s, they frequently had a lot of money to make the movie and not a lot to say.
Right.
You know, and so it was just being flamboyant. You know, let's be crazy. It's 1969. Whoopee. But anyway, that would be pretty decent little film. There's another one. Go ahead. What's that one? I haven't got my list in front of me, but there's a one that just came out with Annette Bening and another actor, both female actors who are now in their 60s. And it is about a 28-year-old woman who always wanted to take this huge swimming challenge to swim someplace in the English Channel or whatever to someplace else. And now that she's 60, she has decided she's going to do it. And this other woman who helps train her to do it. I have not seen it yet, but it's getting praise for the fact that, thank goodness, they're portraying women who aren't just 22.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And they're accomplishing great things.
Naiad?
That's the one.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and that's the name of the woman who did the swimming, enormous feat of resilience.
Annette Bening, Jodie Foster,
Marcos
Diaz.
But yeah, we are flooded with these films coming in, and as winter's coming, we like to take a little bit of time to recommend a few good ones and a few duds. Mm-hmm. I should mention also, going back to to go from Angel to Buckaroo Banzai and Flash Gordon, in both cases, good triumphs over evil.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's none of these spoiler movies where you think you've conquered the awful thing and then it's still alive afterwards. We like to see movies that have something positive where good people triumph.
Oh,
bad
and it's
fail.
About time, for heaven's sake. Yeah.
There have been so many dark movies that just end with you feeling bad about yourself. You know,
that's true. They're out there. Plenty of them.
And it's one thing to have the little hook at the end, you know, oh my gosh, you know. But it's another thing, you get tired of that. Every once in a while, you want to see the good guys win for a change.
Yeah.
And honesty and truthfulness and kindness triumphing over, you know, cruddy stuff. And there's more of those floating around right now. We have to dig them out, and we try to talk about those a little bit. I can't really tell you in the monitors who won.
You haven't finished yet either, huh?
No, I've seen it several times, but I still can't tell you who won.
Okay.
But I marvel at how did they make this? What were they thinking? That was the what were they thinking movie, and what the heck was Bell and Howell doing making it?
That just amazed me. You know, that's like. I don't know. It's like having McDonald's make a feature film.
Yeah, exactly. Every once in a while, someone does do that. Some company decides they're going to. Someone convinces them to fund it, you know, basically. And
if you're talking about bad movies, we certainly can't overlook Manos, The Hands of Fate.
This is the one that you bought the restored DVD, didn't you?
Yeah, just for the sake of having it on hand. Yes.
Yeah, having it on hand. Get it?
Yeah. collector's item, so to speak.
Yeah.
Mystery Science Theater 3000 even did it, and it really needs their commentary to make it watchable. It was recorded on a camera that could only go about 8 minutes at a time, and so they had to splice all the 8 minute segments together. It had no sound on it, so they had to dub in all the voices later. And there was one guy who was the assistant to the evil bad guy, who it's reported was high on drugs the entire time they were shooting, and he certainly looks and sounds it. And it's absolutely horrible, and it really is difficult to sit all the way through it. And there's a book out which I have yet to check out, but it's called Growing Up with Manos, The Hands of Fate, and it's written by the adult who played the little girl in the film, with a foreword by one of the guys from Mystery Science Theater 3000. At your own risk.
Now, sometimes a clinker of a movie is so bad, it becomes famous. We also remember Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So bad, they keep restoring it and restoring it. And then again, they made a movie about Ed Wood, who produced the movie.
I think the original of Plan 9 was actually in black and white, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
They've since colorized it.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, talking about wasting money, but anyway, it was just it was so bad. I saw it on TV when I was a kid. Uh-huh. We had a TV host on the New York stations, a kind of a ghoulish looking fellow named Zachary. And after they showed this movie about the 20th time, right, he took the reel of film and he placed it on his head and let the film spill out of it until it surrounded him completely, saying, we're never watching this movie again. it was very good. Paul, thank you so much for taking time. I know we covered a lot of different stuff, and again, for those of you looking for quality, is it Angel? Angel Studios, right?
Yes, they're the people who brought you The Sound of Freedom, which unfortunately I missed in the theaters, so I'm waiting for the opportunity to see it on video.
Okay, and you can just look up their website and probably get a good look at those. For those you who are looking for a sillier fare, like, again, Buckaroo Banzai, which I still think is a fascinatingly funny film, and also even Flash Gordon, which is just a little nostalgic for me. They're available from online sources. Probably Amazon has them both. I wouldn't be surprised. And the other ones, you know, you can, well, again, The Monitors is right out there on YouTube for you.
Oh,
no
boy.
One's going to ask you for a dime for it, and there's a good reason for that. But sometimes things just get funny, and you got to stare at them and go, what the heck? And that's one of those movies. It was really good.
Yep.
Any final comments before we head out?
No, except a happy Thanksgiving, everybody. It's been a joy to be with you again, Jack, and I look forward to doing this again.
We'll be talking to you later in the season. Trust me on that one, okay?
All right. I will trust you for a change.
Take it easy now.
Jack, you behave yourself not like usual.
Thank you. Broadcaster Paul Sonic and I having a bit of fun on a Sunday. I think we mentioned the movie yesterday and that we had talked about it in an earlier show, but I don't think we described what it was. I want to tell you about it right now because I think for people in a certain age bracket, especially if you are fans of the Beatles and John Lennon, that you find this a charming film. It's kind of a fantasy. Well, it is a fantasy, not even kind of. It is a fantasy. A young man is a not successful guitarist who plays gigs at birthday parties and things like that. And he's with his friends, and something happens in the cosmos that causes there to be a rift in the space-time continuum, which he, of course, is completely unaware of. And he finds himself in a parallel universe that is exactly the same as the one he was in. Same friends, same unfortunate occupation that's not making him any money. Everything is the same, except the Beatles never existed. And he's sitting there strumming along, and he's playing the song Yesterday and singing it. And his friends go, wow, that's a great song. Did you write that? And he says, no, that was the Beatles did that. And they go, who are the Beatles? Well, to make a long story short, there is a moral dilemma because he knows all of these top, beautifully written songs with great lyrics that were insanely successful. And he's the only one who knows them. And what is he going to do? He performs them. He gets more and more famous, but the more and more famous he gets playing this music, the more conflicted he is about it. I will not give you any other spoilers. There is one delightful scene that any of us who mourn the unfortunate shooting of John Lennon would just you kind of almost choke up a little bit. He locates John Lennon, who is not a musician in this reality, but is an artist. He's working in his gallery. He's doing pottery and painting. And he just comes up to say, I just want to thank you. And of course, John Lennon has no idea what he's talking about. And he says, I know this sounds crazy, but can I give you a hug? It's a beautiful scene. It's called Yesterday. I believe it's on the online, you know, various services right now. And you might enjoy seeing it, especially if you have enjoyed music from that time. You're listening to a special edition of Connecting the Diocese. I was in a grocery store, and a young man who wasn't keeping up with the news was very startled when a somewhat older customer was talking about the return of COVID-19, and he said, I thought it was all over. Well, he was corrected. COVID-19 is not all over. The pandemic, the huge loss of life, is over. But the virus is still out there, and this is the time of year when the CDC starts worrying about people all moving back to do indoor activities. As a matter of fact, they do have a new vaccine, booster, will be coming out in late October, and it is supposed to be pretty good against the new variant that happens to be making the rounds right now. The CDC is particularly interested in people who are maybe 75 and older getting the shots, because these are the folks who have a bit more weakened immune system and maybe not be in the greatest of shape as possible. So talk to your pharmacy. It's too early to go to the pharmacy and get a booster. You can't even sign up for it. They will be getting into the pharmacies. And to the best of my knowledge, Medicare will be covering the cost of this shot the way it has done before. This is serious stuff, folks. This is not something where you want to sit around and have the armchair expert who you know, when you talk about new vaccines going, oh, them people, they don't know nothing. Actually, the CDC knows a whole bunch, and they're working very hard to try to protect us because the virus isn't just going away. It never was just going to go away. It's here. It's kind of part of the fabric of the diseases that float around the world, kind of like getting the flu. And so between the flu vaccine and the COVID vaccine, kind of keep checking with your local pharmacy and see when they are available. And especially if you're 70 or 75 or a bit older than that, really seriously consider getting the shot. Jack Socia here with you in the last few minutes of Connecting the Diocese. We missed being here on Veterans Day, the 11th, yesterday, and I was thinking a little bit about it. First off, and some people confuse these things, Veterans Day and Memorial Day are not the same. Memorial Day is a very sacred day when we honor those who gave their ultimate, their lives, to protect this country. Veterans Day is for all the people who, like me, raised their right hand, took a step forward, and swore to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic, and basically cast our fate to the wind. That's right, most of us who joined, even if they guaranteed to train you in something, did not guarantee they would place you in what you were trained for. The military tends to put you where you are needed as opposed to where you would like to go. It was almost exactly this day, way back when, 1966, that I was in Army Intelligence School at the age of 18 in Baltimore, having graduated 6 days out of high school. I had to get into the Army to get into this class, to learn to be an intelligence analyst, a person who works with all kinds of incoming information and tries to figure out what is going on by taking the pieces and seeing patterns and things like that. Fascinating thing. As fate would have it, despite my training and despite the fact that the class I was in was called Vietnam Prep School, I didn't go. They had an immediate need for 10 guys with extremely clean backgrounds and certain qualifications that were needed to work in a top secret office in the Pentagon, handling every bit of communication the Army did. And it just required somebody who was relatively on the ball, but also had a spotless background and a very excellent chance of being a really competent, good citizen who would never dream of betraying his country. I guess I was one of them, and I was stationed in the Pentagon for 3 years. I've talked about this because literally on this day was the day I walked into the Pentagon and got my documents and got my badges and got myself set up and thought I was going to see all kinds of glittering Lucite maps and all the stuff you see like in the war rooms in the movies. And instead, they opened this big combination locked door and we saw a whole bunch of guys sitting there with IBM's electric typewriters processing information, which is what we did. Some of the information that I processed during those 3 years included the death reports from people from Vietnam. And frankly, there was a lot of them, as you can understand. I talk about this once in a while to my wife, and when Veterans Day comes along, you know, I'm all for saluting our veterans, and I feel a little bit bad when I see a guy with a hat that says, you know, Vietnam veteran, and then they ask you, where did you serve? It's kind of like, as my wife said to me one day, it's kind of like you've got a little bit of survivor's guilt. And in some ways I do, because to this day I'll never understand how out of 100 guys in my class, I got picked to go there, and they got picked to go someplace else, usually Vietnam. So maybe it is survivor's guilt. But there's also a fact from back then, and there's plenty of veterans out there who were not in harm's way. Usually, in any case, and this is data from a long time ago, in time of Vietnam, for every guy who was out there in harm's way in Vietnam, there were 17 people supporting that person. 17 people handling logistics, making sure they got the supplies they need, handling getting them fed, getting them transported, dealing with them medically, doing what I was doing, getting vital information from point A to point B for the next day's battles. 17 for every one. So if you're one of these people who joined the Army, you took your step forward, you raised your hand, you swore allegiance, And you cast your fate to the same wind that the guy who spent all of his time in Vietnam was doing. And while I certainly agree that these guys had a tough, tough time, and I feel bad for them, and I feel that the post-traumatic stress from then and later wars is very, very real, I have to resist feeling guilty for the fact that I didn't experience it. So whatever your experience was as a veteran, you raised your hand, you stepped forward, and you worked for your country and went where they told you. And I thank you for that. See you next week.